All right, welcome back to Brief and Not So Brief. I'm Seth.
I'm Ethan.
And this time we're going to be talking about glass. So this time it's going to be a not so brief review of just the one movie, Glass. We may talk about some other M. Night Shyamalan films, but mainly we're going to be talking about Glass. It's not especially timely. We did see it when it first came out.
No, we saw it right as it came out, and we're doing a not so brief review just because it's a new release, and that we established in the intro episode that new releases, we like to do a little bit longer episodes just to go in detail for what happened. So we'll talk about some pros, some cons, how we felt, you know.
I'm thinking what I'd like to do here, because we're making those up as we go along, of course, is start with a very simple, did you like it or did you not like it? And then the rest of our discussion will inform how what degree of like or dislike we have for it. So what about you, Ethan?
Not the biggest fan.
Okay. So you're going not, didn't like it.
I'm drifting more. If there was like in the middle, like let's say it was 1 to 10 and there was a 5, I'd say about 4 or 3 on the side of not the biggest fan.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't like it either. And this is tough because I don't want to spend 30 minutes, 45 minutes just bagging all over this movie. So what I want to do is we'll talk about some gripes that we have about it, but I want to sprinkle in good stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to just do all the good stuff and then all the bad stuff, or all the bad stuff and then all the
good stuff. We could go character by character, because I feel like that will reveal some of the best parts.
Sure. But let's try to stay spoiler light for the first few minutes.
Sounds good.
About it. So what was your biggest problem with the movie?
I mean, I don't think there was really one big problem. I think that if I were to get into my biggest thing, it would include some spoilers, so we can say that for later. But I think that I can for sure say, when you divide the movie into thirds, which is a pretty typical first, second, and third act structure, the first act was solid, I felt like.
Yeah.
And like halfway through the second half, so really halfway through the movie, I was pretty happy. Mm-hmm. And then there's some stuff we can get into later about some issues, but the things that I wasn't the biggest fan of is some design choices for how they shot certain scenes. Particularly, they did some POV shots, which sometimes can be used in interesting ways.
Yeah.
And they kind of just, every opportunity, whenever James McAvoy is squeezing you to death, they put a camera on you and it makes it look like you're shaking around.
Right.
And that was kind of just weird because I couldn't really tell what was going on. And so when they kept on doing it, I was getting a little bit annoyed with it, because if they just done it once or twice for a new kind of design, because you don't see that very much in movies, I wouldn't fine with it. But other than that, I just felt like some characters weren't given as much as they should have been. You find out later why that was a thing, and it's explained. It's just a little bit frustrating. But I think my biggest problem was going into it, just the idea of, you know, you are not superheroes. I just didn't like that whole premise of being in an asylum trying to convince you not superheroes, when it is very clear they have supernatural abilities.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just, it seems like, I said it on the way home from the movie, I was like, who actually has a career in that?
Sure.
You know, I know it's a fictional world, but it's just like, you know, oh, what are you? Oh, I'm a doctor. Oh, you know, I'm a writer. Yeah, I convince people they're not superheroes. You know, it's just like, it's a little bit weird.
And I don't feel like this is a spoiler so much. As long as we're not covering something that was in the trailer.
Yeah.
As long as we're covering something that was in the trailer.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that's terribly spoilery.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's seen the trailer probably with her trying to convince them that they're supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest problem is here, if you've been following this series, you know absolutely that these people have abilities of some kind.
And they're just a little bit more subtle than it is a typical superhero movie.
I want to double back to that scene when we start getting into spoiler talk. But I felt like the first half hour was pretty solid, and after that I got bored.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the first, can we go into like what is done throughout the first part of the movie? Or should we?
No, I don't.
Without going into too much spoilers. Yeah. Well, I'd say that just what they decide to do with like how they cover certain characters, their backstories, a little bit of flashbacks was done pretty well. I think what you're referencing with, you got bored. I remember, like, halfway through the movie, there's a particular scene, and you just looked over and be like, yeah, I'm bored.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of like, yeah, that's kind of right. And so from then on, I was just bored. I was just kind of trying to find something to, like, be like, oh, I enjoyed this.
Speaking of which, let's find a positive here.
Okay.
Big positive, James McAvoy is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's one of my favorite actors working today. And, you know, he's been in some other great movies, but I think that this role really suits him. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's a breakout role because I feel like he's broken out in other roles before, sure. But I think this is probably will be, when you look back on his career when, you know, I'm an adult, probably one of his most famous roles in this series, just because I think his ability to switch between characters, just obviously from Split, you know, that multiple personality thing, and then also just kind of some comedic relief with, obviously, Hedwig, which is one of the personalities, and so I think he does really good for comedic relief. I think he does good for some emotional scenes. I think he's really great in that. And so I think he's probably the biggest positive, in my opinion, because he's probably featured the most.
I think so.
Like a lot.
So that's the biggest positive for the movie for me is that he really does have some meaty stuff to go into in this movie, and I love the fact that without him saying a word, you can see from his facial expression
who he is.
You can guess within, you know, two or three characters who he is. You can tell if it's Hedwig. You can tell if it's
Patricia. I mean, there's Barry. There's Patricia. Yeah. There's
who's the other main dude?
I can't remember. It's the one that with Dennis. Yes, and then eventually you get Kevin, which
Is all of those, I feel like I could tell from a still.
Oh yeah,
of him.
I think that's great acting. Mm-hmm. So
Samuel L. Jackson is really good in the parts where he is able to do something.
Yes,
and that's to me that feeds into one of the negatives. It's just that, like, we don't get much from him for the first hour of the movie.
But when he is, it's very short, sweet, and kind of gets to the point. You understand that he's pretty menacing, and it's good. The other thing I was going to tie back into is one of the positives with, you know, James McAvoy's character with the Horde and all that. The also other negative is if there's too much of him, it's no longer a Glass movie. It is a Split 2, you know, it feels too much like a sequel to Split. I mean, obviously it is a sequel to Unbreakable and Split, but it just feels like a movie for him. You know, it didn't feel like all three characters were involved as much as they should have been.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the movie's pretty well shot, other than I do agree there were too many shots that were close up.
There were a lot of, actually, on, you know, the opposite side of being close-up shots, there were some great pan-out shots, wide shots.
Yeah.
Which, for me, my favorite kind of shot when it comes to movies is, you know, the long takes are in action scenes, but if it's not an action movie, I love big shots that show a large amount of land that kind of, you know, there's something going on in the background.
Shows you the geography.
It gives you something to work with, and especially going back to the action scenes, because there is a little bit more action in this movie than people would expect, which I think we can go into, is both positive and negative, just because Unbreakable, obviously, only action was really him going and putting someone in he gripped him up against a wall or something like that, I think. And then Split, obviously, not much action. It was kind of more a thriller horror vibe. This movie, there's a fair amount of action scenes. I don't think it's necessarily bad. I think some of them were handled pretty well. Some of them, like I said, not so much.
My biggest negative I can't really talk about without getting into spoilers. I'm trying to think of anything else.
Well, let's go to another positive. Like we said, I think the acting in the whole movie is pretty solid. I feel like the acting's great. I just feel like, also on the acting side, I just realized this. The thing we did notice within the first 30 minutes, we did enjoy it, but the dialogue...
Some of the dialogue was
not good. there's a scene we can get into later where it's just like a character says something. I'm like, that was very poorly delivered.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, the dialogue for me, I don't really criticize that as much as other things, just because I feel like you could make up for it in other ways.
Sure.
But I mean, to some people, dialogue is really important. And if you are someone who needs insanely good and complex dialogue, it might be a little bit disappointing.
Yes. And when I think of M. Night Shyamalan's movies, I don't think of dialogue
as
being something huge. There's some scenes with dialogue in them that I look back on and I'm like, okay, that was amazing. Like The Sixth Sense, I mean, it's just a really good movie.
Yeah.
Unbreakable didn't have a ton of that, and it was almost always Samuel L. Jackson who was delivering it. And here, the good stuff does still come from Samuel L. Jackson, but some of the stuff between Bruce Willis and his son, which I like the fact that it's the same actor who
played
his son.
That is really cool. And looking back on it, I can totally tell. Like, his face looks exactly the same.
It does, yeah.
It's crazy.
But yeah, the worst, cringiest dialogue was between him and his son.
Yes.
There's one where, this isn't much of a spoiler, but at some point, Bruce Willis is looking for someone, let's say.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, David is looking for someone. And his son is showing him this map with a big triangle on it.
Oh, yeah.
And he says the word triangle over and over and over. And, yeah. And I'm like, just area. You don't have to keep saying triangle.
Yeah.
This area.
Well,
this
he was region. Just like, you know, there's been a lot of sightings of him around here, but I don't think he's in here because, you know, I think he'd go somewhere else about this mile away right. from this. So I think he's over here. You should go explore over here. You should take a walk over there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, we get it.
Yeah.
I will admit, I did kind of like the whole idea of him being, you know, the guy in the ear as his son.
Sure.
Using his little workplace as kind of his little, I guess you could say, hideout for him to do the work. Right. I think it's a nice correlation to show that, you know, obviously in the first movie, you have that great scene where he's running to like shoot his dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then it kind of goes this parallel of him being older and then his son kind of gets involved with it.
Yeah. And it's very comic books, right?
Yeah,
to have, for sure. To have Oracle or, mm-hmm. you know, Overwatch from, yeah. from Arrow, right? Mm-hmm. Spoiler time?
I would say so. I think we've gotten into some general positives and negatives. I think spoiler time.
Yeah. And then I think at the end we need to sum up, you know, I mean, you kind of already said at the top, right?
I mean,
that you were like a 4 out of 10.
I would say about that, yeah.
Yeah. And we'll sum up at the end.
For so, sure.
One of the other cringe dialogue scenes was
with M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, yeah,
that was the main one you were talking about.
Yeah.
Basically, what happens is there's a term used in the movie to like an undercover term that David Dunn and his son used to symbolize or mean, hey, I'm gonna go look for some bad guys. Yeah,
right. Which we can't say because our dogs are in the room.
Oh goodness, yeah,
that's the word.
And so, you know, he says that he's gonna go walk.
Right.
And his son's like, you know, you shouldn't go do that. And it's this back and forth. They probably go back and forth like 6 times.
Yeah.
And in the background, M. Night Shyamalan is trying to buy this because they work at a security store, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's just like, hey, what should I buy? And so, you know, the son's telling him like, hey, you should do this. And then as he's about to walk out the door, they have this encounter. Mm-hmm. And then M. Night's like, man, just let your dad go on a walk. And it's just like, it was a little, cringy, but it's all right. I'm not too bothered by it just because, like I said, dialogue, it's...
Well, it only on one hand, I look at it and I'm like, that's extremely ham-handed dialogue. On the other hand, it's not like these guys are super spies. Right?
Yeah.
And so you could totally see something like that happening where it reminded me of Megamind, where they would, Megamind and his sidekick would speak in code. But the first thing they would say was code and then whatever it was in plain English.
Yeah.
And for some reason, even though he was this brilliant guy, he thought that was speaking in code. So I kind of see it that way, where mm-hmm. it's these guys who aren't really super spies, who are trying to obliquely talk about something in mm-hmm. front of a customer. But I'm like, just pull them aside and say, I'm going out on patrol or something.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Yeah,
it's whatever. Back to the second spoiler. I think we're both in consensus that the best part of an M. Night movie is the twist or some sort of a
nope.
Agree.
Nope.
What?
Disagree.
What?
You don't? I completely disagree.
Really?
Yeah.
Like that's not your favorite movie of part of M. Night movies?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I'd say maybe he's well known. I'll use that.
He's well known for
doing twist endings, and a lot of the movies with Sixth Sense, obviously one of the famous, you know, endings with that, mm-hmm. and then Signs, and there's some other stuff where
there's always around. the gotcha moment at the end of his movies that goes back and shows you mm-hmm. that you've been seeing something wrong the whole time. And the problem is once you've established that, then you have to hit it every time.
Yeah.
But audiences are already looking for it.
Yeah.
And so I don't like the fact that he's painted himself into a corner like that. And then
that's true.
In this case,
there's two really in the about 10 minutes you get told, and they're both crappy.
Yes. Yeah. Neither of them works.
Yeah. I'll make sure to rephrase. Yes. Not the best part, just his most well-known features.
Okay.
And so you want to explain one of them?
The thing that you enjoyed most about him.
No, I meant just, just like the things that... He's like, when you think M. Night Shyamalan, you think
twists. Yeah.
So what was one of the things that, one of the endings that was twisting?
Well, the biggest problem that I have is that the sort of, it's not even a post-credit scene. It's just at the very end, the Sarah Paulson character walks into this restaurant with a bunch of people who have a shamrock on their, mm-hmm. on their wrists and talks about how, you know, she feels like she's succeeded here and she knows what she needs to do in the next place. And it's that Standing Alone is this, it gives you this notion that there's a secret society that is suppressing the knowledge of superpowered people.
Mm-hmm. And going from location to location try to eliminate basically everyone that has any kind of power.
If it was all by itself, I'd go, huh, okay, that was interesting. A little underwhelming, mm-hmm. but interesting.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the first hint we got of that. We already got her going to David as he's being drowned in a puddle. I
hate this.
And you know, mm-hmm. take my hand. Sorry, I have to say it that way because Keanu Reeves and Speed. And so he gets a flash of this restaurant full of people with the shamrocks. And you've already seen the sniper with the shamrock. Uh-huh. So there was already enough information to tie together that sniper.
Is working for her.
Yeah, is working with her. There was already enough of that. We already had A, and then at the end we had B. Mm-hmm. But instead, at the end it's C, and B is her taking his hand while he's in the puddle.
Yeah, so the thing I couldn't stand is, I'm not going to lie, I just didn't like her character. Sarah Paulson's, is that her name? I didn't like her character in the movie.
Yeah.
I didn't really get her motivation. And obviously, like I said, it fixes itself with this twist at the end. But the thing that it's kind of funny to me is that in these scenes, there was always something that would happen. There would always be like talking in this restaurant, and then one person would leave and it would go silent. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, all right, you know, it's this big club meeting, you know, mm-hmm. we're going to talk. And it's like this secret society.
It's trying to do John Wick, the Continental.
Yeah. And so their thing, like my father mentioned, is they go from location to location and they try to eliminate and suppress anybody with powers.
Right.
Which I can buy that.
Sure.
But then, like you said, before this is revealed, or during, like really kind of during it, there's this encounter with all three of the main characters, with Mr. Glass, mm-hmm. the Horde, with, you know, do we refer to him as the Horde?
Yeah, I think so.
And then, obviously, David Dunn. And so there's this huge kind of action fight scene where David Dunn and the Horde kind of go at it, and then Mr. Glass is in there kind of rolling around his wheelchair, and his mom's there, because not only are the three people there, but there are three, like,
people who are connected to
them. Yes. So the girl from Split is there, who she kind of is able to calm him down and control him.
Yeah.
Mr. Glass's mother, and then obviously David Dunn's son. And so the next twist, which... I don't know.
Was it a twist?
Was it necessary?
No.
It wasn't. Everybody, if you took that out...
Everybody who knows about Mr. Glass knows that he's got a plan, right? He's your Lex Luthor. And so the idea that it was some big reveal that somehow he had a plan within a plan, I'm like, well, yeah. Yeah, of course he did.
Yeah. And so what happens is there's this flashback, which is really cool how they do it. They have a deleted scene from Unbreakable.
I did like that.
The scene shows, is it the Horde's actual dad? Like, as a kid, it's his dad, right? Or who is it? That's on the bus. Remember on the train?
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember that
they were connected. Yeah. Yeah, it's...
So, basically, Samuel Jackson's character, Mr. Glass, not only does he derail that bus, I mean, that train that David Dunn survives, but one of the people that dies on that train...
Is Kevin's father.
Happens to be Kevin's father.
Right.
And so that kind of makes Kevin be like, oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't be following with this guy. And then it kind of turns it into this weird, he goes after David again, so Mr. Glass, after he punches Mr. Glass, right? Mm-hmm. After he breaks like half his bones.
Yeah.
And so there's this great scene where he throws David Dunn into this big water compartment, mm-hmm. and then he fights him and then gets him out. And these officers coming out of nowhere take David and they start drowning him in a puddle. You know, and you're like, okay, well, I guess that's a thing. But then you get a POV shot through his eyes. He's looking up, and then she comes over. Sarah Paulson's character comes over and just reaches out and explains the whole thing for him. Mm-hmm. Like, I, in general, don't – I mean, I don't think any reasonable movie fan likes exposition-heavy dialogue for no reason.
Yeah,
you could have not said that, just showed the flash, you would have gotten the premise.
Yeah,
but I don't think it would have worked.
Yeah, I maintain that that was not the least bit necessary. That we didn't need that moment, mm-hmm. and you know, kind of going back to what you were talking about the stuff in the asylum where she's talking to them and trying to convince them that they're not really special. Mm-hmm. There's a moment there where she almost convinces Hedwig.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
but he's simple, right? And so it makes sense that she might be able to convince him. And she's talking to David Dunn, and she's like, you know, here,
what's your greatest weakness and stuff? Is that what they go through?
No, when she was talking about basically trying to explain everything that they saw as supernatural. So she was trying to explain his intuition stuff as just...
Right.
He's a mentalist kind of person,
right? And how he's able to figure stuff out like a magician, right?
Right.
And with the Horde, what was that? What was her explanation?
That the metal bars were rusted, you know.
Oh, right, because it was in a super old zoo.
Yeah.
And then for Mr. Glass, it was...
I don't even remember that.
I know, because he didn't respond at that time.
Right.
Remember, he wasn't responsive. Mm-hmm. So half the movie is Samuel Jackson twitching.
Yeah.
That's all he is.
Like one eyelid twitching.
Yeah. Which, it makes for some kind of creepy scenes, how he's just mm-hmm. out in the middle there, and the guy rolls him back in, and he's just still twitching.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of ominous and weird, because you don't really know what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I will admit, the stuff he does throughout the last half of the movie is pretty stinking cool.
It is.
I think, now that we're in spoiler territory, we can discuss how his master plan, up until the end, was fine. Mm-hmm. Up until that big, weird reveal. He goes into this surgery... Well, because they have like a hospital in there that they were going to use to brainwash him, kind
of lobotomize him.
Yeah, and so he takes this kind of glass cylinder, I would call it, and brings it into his little room. And eventually, when one guy comes in to check on him, he kills him, takes his patch, gets the Horde out of there. They both leave, and then ensues the big fight scene.
Yeah,
and so. David has to like crash out of there, and he taunts him like, "Hey, you can crash through this metal door," you know. And
it was the most PG-13 throat slashing of all time.
Yes, indeed. Which it was pretty shocking. I think I was looking down when it happened.
It was, yeah. I was.
It surprised. Was out of nowhere. Just you just kind of did it.
So yeah, at some point, you know, they thought that they had performed this procedure on him to disable him, essentially, yes, right? Indeed. To take him. Out of the equation.
It was supposed to be, from the viewer's perspective, he's surprised. Like, they wake him up like, "Hey, it's time for your surgery. We had to move it. You were out last night," you know?
Right.
And so basically, since they saw him being active outside his little lab mm-hmm. or his room, they're like, "Oh, well, we got to perform surgery on him right now."
Right.
So he wakes up. We think he's getting the surgery, and we think that his plans failed. But sure enough, comes back, kills the guy, gets the Horde. They get out of there. Like mm-hmm. we discussed with that whole action scene. Then the big twist. But the other thing that kind of bothered me was there's almost like two twists in one.
Yeah.
Where there's a scene when before Mr. Glass and the Horde get out where he's typing. You know, he's typing. Mm-hmm. And I think it was, say, just him gathering all the security footage. And you're like, oh, yeah, no big deal.
He was writing some code.
Yeah, and so no big deal. You're like, whatever, just typical villain stuff, but it was revealed later that Sarah Paulson's about to fly to her new location, mm-hmm. and she has this realization. So she goes back to the lab, and there's this guy like, "Oh my goodness, you know, this guy, he had this master plan. He released all the security footage." Well,
she spoon feeds it to the audience.
Yes, she says all of it.
Yeah,
she says all of it, and so when she says all of it, you come to the conclusion, oh no, you know. Even though he's dead now, because mm-hmm. the thing is, all everybody of them died. Die.
Yeah.
Which, I am all for a dark ending, but this was a stupid dark ending.
Yeah, I don't mind the fact that they killed everybody off, I just felt like it was kind of empty.
They didn't earn it.
Yeah.
That's why I think. Yeah. So basically, what he does is, he has a suicide mission to say, "Hey, we're going to go die, I have this plan, mm-hmm. but I'm going to reveal all this information to everyone, and they're going to realize, hey, there's some people out there with supernatural abilities, if they try to tell you there aren't. Then there clearly is, because there's camera of like the Horde pushing over our car, you know, all this stuff. And it's just supposed to prove to everyone that they're superheroes pretty much.
And so on the one hand, Glass wins, right?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so that makes it so that maybe the movie is named correctly.
I guess you could say that, but I don't think it is. But yeah. I mean, I'll buy it. The thing at the very end is the three characters that are like most closely tied to the villains.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not villains, but supernatural beings.
Mm-hmm.
Are in this train station, and then the footage of all this just starts appearing on everyone's phones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, trope in movies where it's just appearing everywhere. I'm just like, how'd that get there?
It's just spreading like a viral video. Yeah, it's trending.
It's trending. It's just.
But I was certain for a while there that they were going to reveal that the son and the. I can never remember what her name is.
Anya Taylor-Joy or something like that.
That one of them was going to have some kind of abilities. mm-hmm. right? That somehow her suffering, you know, from mm-hmm. kind of carrying that story over from Split, like she was going to have another personality or something. But yeah, no, none of that.
Yeah.
Unless there's a future one.
I mean, I watched another review where they said the movie ended because hugs existed. So the reason that all three characters end up dying is, we already mentioned, David Dunn gets drowned for no reason.
Yeah.
Mr. Glass gets his bones broken, you know, typical, kind of bleeds out
uh-huh.
by his mom. And then he's like, has this sentimental conversation with his mom. Uh-huh. He dies. But then the Horde, kind of, as he's fighting David, the character you just mentioned, the girl, comes over and basically tries to calm him down, grabs him, and apparently Kevin, when he experiences some sort of, like, I guess, loving sensation, kind of calms him down and brings Kevin into the light, who's supposed right. to be the most kind of real personality. And so when he comes out, that's kind of like his most exposing personality.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that moment, a sniper shoots Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of sit there for a couple of minutes and have this conversation. He keeps on switching between personalities. And yeah. she keeps on having to say, Kevin Wendell Crumb, you know, to get him back. And so that's how he dies, is from being shot, because he's being hooked.
So character's name is Casey, by the way.
It is Casey, yes.
Yeah.
So
I feel like we didn't pull out enough positives.
Yeah, that's true. So I think we didn't talk about very many positives, but I think that the positive were there really evens it out to be a okay film.
Mm-hmm.
I like we mentioned, I think just the overall thing was the acting and some of the, I guess you could say, cinematography.
Yeah.
Was solid.
Mm-hmm.
But the still writing,
interesting things with colors.
Yes. That's the thing that I think a lot of people enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely some cool stuff, but then I think the biggest problems are with some of the things that are hardest to, I mean, not hardest to mess up. I think if you mess those up, that can tank it.
Yeah.
And so the writing, not great. Directing, I mean, the thing that people say is that whenever M. Night is under pressure, his movie is okay, but when he's not, makes great movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of applies to this when you think about it. But, you know, just I think it's about half and half with solids. I mean, with pros and cons to even it out to be an okay film, like mm-hmm. I said. So
yeah, it's I guess on the scale of did I like it, did I not like it, I'm kind of it's an okay movie,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it's I can't imagine if I had Unbreakable, Split, and Glass on my shelf that I would ever pick Glass.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm okay with some slow build up in a movie,
mm-hmm.
but for this, it just never built up to anything.
Yeah.
Unbreakable, slow build up, built up some great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Split, pretty slow, built up some stuff at the end.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be something at the end that you've been creating all this tension, all this drama, and it fulfills it. When there's no release of this drama, it's like you leave the theater all tense. You're like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah.
You know?
And I feel like the payoff at the end was not big enough for the build.
I agree.
Of three movies.
100%. Yeah.
I expected there to be more cataclysmic, you know, fighting between the two.
Mm-hmm.
I also kind of thought, well, at some point they're going to realize that there's another common enemy,
uh-huh.
who is this group who's trying to suppress them, and that maybe in another movie we'd see them team up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Overall, a little disappointing.
Bit of a letdown.
Yeah. For sure.
Do we want to give letter grades or anything like that? No, I don't think so.
No, I already said that. I think it's like a 5 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been doing the numeric ones.
I like the numeric because it gives me some more leeway. With grades, there's only really 5 options. Which,
no, you can go plus or minus.
I mean, you could go plus or minus. I guess that's 10, but I'm not the biggest fan of plus or minuses. So,
yeah. If I went letter grade, it's like C+.
I think we should keep doing the different grades, so it gives people out there who have different.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, I wouldn't go see it in a theater again. I think that's a big thing. I think if you want to go see a movie in a theater again, that means it's got to be pretty stinking good.
Yeah.
This, not gonna go see it again.
Yeah, this one I didn't feel like it was worth going to the theater. Like there was mm-hmm. nothing in this movie that needed to be in a theater.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. All done?
I think so.
Okay. Well, anybody, if you want to reach out to us, you can find us on Twitter @BriefNotSoBrief and send us a a tweet. Let us know you're out there. That'd be cool. Of course, you can go and find us in the iTunes store or Apple Podcasts. Have you rated us yet?
Oh, goodness.
No, I was talking to the listener. Or you can leave us a review in Google Play. That'd be cool, too. I also submitted us to Stitcher, so you can find us in Stitcher now. So, yeah. Cool. I think, hopefully, in the near future, we're going to be doing another Not So Brief.
Oh, yeah. So, I am much more excited for the next one. Yeah.
So, we'll have to see how the schedule works out for if we want to do that one before we do a different one that we've been planning.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
I really don't like the idea of just crapping all over a movie for 40 minutes.
I think we should put up some pros and some cons.
Yeah, I think maybe sprinkle them throughout.
Okay.